This is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm David Brancaccio. Pay full price for a high-end college, including room, board, and the rest, and it's $80,000 a year times four equals $320,000 versus the other big-ticket thing for most. The typical price of a house or condo in America is $284,000. Paying for a kid's college can be the biggest money decision we make, and it's often driven by too much emotion and not enough data. Ron Lieber immersed himself in this world. He writes the New York Times column, Your Money, and his book, out today, is called The Price You Pay for College. Hey, Ron, how are you?
It's a thrill to be back. Thanks, David.
Now, you wrestle with this in this book. You try to be financially rational. You urge people to figure out what they want to pay, how to get the best deal, but you and the college-bound kid are up against insane social pressures.
It's absolutely true. And what I was trying to do for people is to help them have the most emotionally intelligent college shopping experience they possibly could, right? Because if you get in touch with the feelings that can affect you in this particular process, things like fear and guilt and snobbery, then you'll have a better sense of the ways in which you might be fooled, tricked internally to spending more than you need to and more than you want to.
There's the rational piece of your brain that wants to say, okay, honey, everyone can't own a Ferrari, but loads of people will make you and your kid try to feel like a failure if you don't get the kid and the kid doesn't get into the Ferrari of colleges.
Well, this is the thing about that, right? Because some of this is about the gold star for parenting that you might acquire as a mom or as a dad if your kid gets into a college that is somehow impressive to other people. But what other people don't understand is whatever financial constraints you may be operating under. And also, there's all sorts of people in your community who have no idea that all sorts of pretty selective schools are bidding behind the scenes with tens of thousands of dollars off each year in this form of discounting known as merit aid that might well make it be a really good decision, even if you're turning down a school that might be more impressive to those people.
I like the part of this section on emotions where you kind of turn this around on people who might be nudging you. Like, let's say it's your parents bugging you about their grandchild. I mean, what do you suggest? You say, well, okay then, dear grandparent, how about you pay some of this, right?
Exactly, right? I mean, the whole, you know, script for having a conversation with the grandparents where you ask them to pay some is its own topic. But I think some of what we're talking about here is a kind of guilt, right? If your parents, as a middle-aged person, say, if your parents did it for you, right? They paid for you. They got you into a spot that allowed you to sort of reach for the stars, however you define that. You feel duty-bound to do the same thing for your own teenage children. And your parents, the grandparents themselves, they're letting you know that, either subtly or not so subtly. But here's the thing you have to say to yourself, right? Things are a lot different than they used to be. The cost of college, certainly the retail price and even the net price, is going up at much higher than the rate of inflation. And also, it's way more competitive to get into these schools than it used to be. So, you know, if your own aging parents are making you feel like you're doing something wrong because you're making different choices, just stop and remind yourself how different the world is.
Yeah, and that's essentially raising consciousness with the grandparents. Maybe we need to raise consciousness about these issues more widely in schools, among the students' peers. I mean, we try to combat body shaming, right, Ron? What about college shaming? That's what we're talking about.
I think it's an excellent idea. In the reporting, I spoke to all sorts of guidance counselors who help high school seniors apply to college. And, you know, one of the challenges they have is that they're just overrun, right? Overwhelmed. Budget cuts, you know, particularly in the last year during the pandemic, they've got more students to see, more desperation, more uncertainty with the colleges. It is all they can do to help a couple hundred students find the right fit for admissions purposes. They cannot counsel everyone about their finances and their odds of getting, you know, need-based aid or these, you know, merit aid scholarships that used to be known as academic awards, right? They just can't do it. And so there are not enough grown-ups who know how the system works to help kind of talk people off of the edge and make them comfortable with the decisions that they are making.
another one of these unproductive emotions, but it's there, is a fear really that's based on something real. We all worry that we're not setting up our kids to do as well or better than we did. And we have this notion that maybe if they got them into the right school or even a fancy school, they'd have better odds of not being that statistic.
Yeah, much of the decision making here is governed by this sort of fear of falling, right? So if you are a person with more money than average, you probably worked pretty hard to get there, or you inherited a bunch and you're working like mad to make sure that your little all is preserved. And so you don't want your kid to go tumbling down the social class ladder. And what is about to happen is that you're going to make a purchase decision involving a six-figure amount of money that will directly affect the trajectory of their lives. So you would actually be sort of nuts not to be worried, right? So I'm trying to channel that fear into something more constructive, not towards borrowing as much as possible to necessarily reach for the most expensive or prestigious school, but to channel that fear into a sort of determination to ask the best possible questions that are particular to your individual child that will allow you to make a decision that inspires hope as opposed to being scared.
All right, there's a lot of practical advice throughout this book. Let's get a piece of this, right? So if a family's income is lower, they may be eligible for help with college costs that would be triggered by filling out the free application for federal student aid, the FAFSA. But for many middle-class families, that may not help all that much, that money.
That's true. So there is a sort of gap, almost a donut hole in the world of need-based financial aid, where families with, let's call it low six-figure incomes, may not qualify for much, if any, need-based aid at the schools that they are applying to, but they are probably not earning enough to just go around writing $25,000 checks to the flagship state university, let alone a $60,000 or $70,000 check to another one. So they need to turn to this sort of parallel form of financial aid that has emerged in less than a generation. It's known as merit aid. And just about every school plays in this field in some way, shape, or form outside of the 50 or so most selective ones in the country.
So this merit aid, this is your student got some decent grades, some nice test scores, and wouldn't it be nice if there was this list that would just tell you which colleges give merit aid, under what circumstances, and how much?
If only it was that simple. So, you know, it's not really in the institution's interest to be transparent about their pricing and discounting. Some of them find it embarrassing, and others don't want to signal to competitors exactly how things are going to work, right? Because this began, you know, years ago, decades, with what we used to know as sort of traditional academic scholarships, very limited. But then less selective institutions thought, wow, well, we could improve our numbers and maybe do better on the U.S. news list if we started throwing, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 coupons at teenagers to see how they would respond. But then when that worked, next year, the competitor schools had to do the same thing. And now there's a whole bunch of this going on, right? So the most selective schools that do offer merit aid may still only give it to the top 10 or 20% of the admitted students. But farther down the food chain, there are schools that literally have to give everyone a pony, right? Everybody gets merit aid at a lot of private colleges now. And so the term has ceased to have a certain amount of meaning. And the hard part as a consumer of higher education is figuring out exactly which kind of school you are dealing with.
Right. I mean, there's even a school or two that really will tell you what you'll get in advance.
Yeah, there are a handful. In terms of the state schools, the states are much more likely to be straightforward, particularly with in-state students. And then there's the University of Alabama, which has made a mission of taking kids of, you know, above average academic prowess and above average affluence, you know, raising the out-of-state price to the moon, discounting it by, say, $20,000 or $25,000 a year to make them feel good about themselves, and still have them show up at a net price of, you know, $35,000 or something, which helps a lot with the state coffers, right? So there's that model of doing it, and it's worked quite well for state schools.
But it's much more likely that you'll have to do some serious digging. How do you get started in trying to figure out schools where the odds are higher that the applicant might get some serious merit aid.
So this is the challenge. You would think that you would be able to go to the financial aid homepage of these institutions, or that you would be able to Google X college merit aid and actually find the answers. But when you get to those pages, usually they don't tell you anything at all. And so the place you go to look for this is a strange small font document known as the Common Data Set, which is often never anywhere near the admissions office website or the financial aid office's website. So the Common Data Set is something that every school or nearly every school fills out. It allows them to take all of the data, demographics and academic performance and, you know, on-campus experience that U.S. News and other college ratings and ranking services might be interested, and sort of dump it all in one place. Usually it's a PDF. And what the schools do, most of them, although not everyone, is that they will make it public, but often not any place where you're likely to find it. So you have to Google name of college, Common Data Set. And what you will find there is some really interesting data about the amount of discounts and to whom the colleges tend to give to families who have no demonstrated need, right? So these are families who, if they applied for need-based aid, wouldn't get any, but the school is giving them money anyway. And to find out how much, you have to go digging in that Common Data Set.
So you find this CDS, and you're looking for what, a percentage of people who get merit aid or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, basically what you want to do is do a control F, you know, on your computer. You want to find section H2A. That's the magic number. And basically what they say there in that section is they say, you know, what percentage of the people at this institution who had no financial need, so, you know, relatively affluent families and higher, got a financial aid offer anyway. So they don't use the term merit aid there, but that's what they mean, right? So then you can find out, what was the average amount of merit aid that somebody got last year? What percentage of the people who had no need actually got this merit aid? And then you can go someplace else on the form and find out, all right, what does the top 25% of the incoming class look like in terms of their grade point average, or certainly in terms of their test scores? And then you can sort of start to figure out, okay, you know, my kid is kind of in the ballpark here, and it looks like the average kid who was in the ballpark, you know, got a $19,000 discount last year. So maybe if my kid gets in, we can expect a $19,000 discount. And then if we don't, we can have a conversation with the school about why.
Now, this Common Data Set tells you all this. It doesn't tell you everything, though.
It doesn't tell you everything. You know, college admissions is still, you know, more art than science. And, you know, it can't necessarily predict whether your child's going to get in. And the other thing that, you know, is difficult to predict here is that all of those statistics, that's just like a measure of history, right? And it can't account for what's going to happen to that particular college in the marketplace this year, or how many merit aid discounts it will feel like it has to offer at the last minute to make its numbers. It certainly can't predict whether there's going to be a global pandemic, which will sort of blow all pricing models to smithereens.
Yeah, right. Now, you actually found some interesting stuff about schools that might be prone to giving out merit aid on social media, Facebook.
So at the beginning of the reporting process, I spent a lot of time in a private Facebook group that will, you know, let basically anyone in who wants to follow the rules, called Paying for College 101. And it is basically a bunch of people trying to figure out how the system works and then attempting to beat it by getting an, you know, outsized excess amount of merit aid from the schools that are most likely to offer it. And so there's no statistical data that comes out of there, but there are just incredible stories of people who have gone to great lengths to reverse engineer the system, and they are extremely generous and sometimes opinionated to a fault with their knowledge. It's a bunch of people throwing the rope back, you know, for the families who are coming along next. And it's a sort of, you know, exercise in both commiseration and communication about how best to get through this extremely difficult process.
Yeah, crowdsourcing at work also. Now, thinking more widely about intelligence gathering, Ron, when you visit colleges, I mean, you really keep your eyes open. What are some unconventional things that you look for? I mean, obviously, you take the college tour.
Sure. So one of the things I always try to make sure to do is to take visual notes, right? You always want to have your camera on your phone, you know, ready and your phone charged, because you'll see the most amazing things on the walls. So, you know, one of the chapters I wrote was about mental health and how there's kind of like an epidemic of mental illness on campuses, and these counseling centers are overrun, right? So one of the things that was noteworthy for me, right, I happened to be at Colorado College on the tour. There was a poster, and there were a bunch of undergrads there on the poster named with their real names and their diagnoses.
Wow.
So if I am a parent and my child has suffered from mental illness, and I want to make sure that they are in an environment where it's okay to talk about that and where they'll find friends who are open about it too, that's something that's important to me, right? And if I'm thinking about spending extra above and beyond whatever my state university charges, that's the sort of thing that, you know, could be a difference maker, right? How open is this place to people who think differently, who are wired differently, to the people with the sorts of mental health conditions that might have kept them out of college at all a generation ago?
Yeah, what's up on the walls? Also, you read the college newspapers. I guess you're a reporter. You would.
So one thing that people forget all these years later is that many of these colleges still have thriving communities of journalism. And it's not just the standard newspaper, although you can certainly read the college newspaper online. You don't have to spend the money to visit the college to see that, right? And you should, and you should sign up for its newsletter, and you should look at the Twitter feed. But there are probably going to be undergraduates on Instagram, you know, posting about their lives. This too is interesting. I mean, it's a sort of curated version of themselves. And of course, there are colleges now who are paying some of their undergraduates as influencers to work for the school. So you want to be on the lookout for that. But, you know, it's another way in to getting a sense of, you know, how life looks outside of the confines of a carefully constructed tour experience.
Ron Lieber, personal finance columnist for the New York Times. The new book is called The Price You Pay for College, an entirely new roadmap for the biggest financial decision your family will ever make. Ron, thank you.
My pleasure.